Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to the Device Talks weekly podcast. Our guest today is Torrey Smith. He's the CEO and co-founder of Endiatics. He'll also be our closing keynote at Device Talks West, which is happening on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. I really enjoyed my conversation with Torrey Smith. We talked about PillBot, of course, which is the swallowable remote-controlled robot that Endiatics is building as a virtual endoscope, and we'll have a presentation of that at Device Talks West. But in this conversation, you'll learn about some of the new stuff that will be presented at Device Talks West, but more important about Torrey Smith's story. It's inspirational for anyone who's a wannabe entrepreneur. This is something you should listen to, and advice maybe you should follow. So join us at Device Talks West. Go to west.devicetalks.com to register. Use the code DTPOD25 to save 25% off the price of registration. Before you do that, on Tuesday, we'll be having a Device Talks Tuesday hosted by Aptics, the title of which is Gearing Up, Benefits and Design Considerations for High-Performance Plastic Gears. Aptics always drops a ton of knowledge on people at their Device Talks Tuesdays, and they always have great experts on panel. So if this is an area of interest to you, make sure you register at devicetalks.com. Registration is free. You can watch it live at 4 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday or on demand. You can ask questions either way and get your questions answered. So that's it. Join us at Device Talks West, October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center, and join us on Device Talks Tuesdays this Tuesday at 4 p.m. All right. Let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Sir,
doing well, Tom. Doing well. Happy Friday. We're talking on a Friday morning.
Yeah, we are. So it's Friday, 10:45 Eastern time. So if you folks who are listening to this on Friday night, when I hope to send it out, it's just 6 hours after we talk. That's how quickly we turn things around here.
That's right.
At Device Talks Weekly,
we get things
so
done.
So because it's on the company Slack channel, you hit the fair.
Yeah,
the kids at the fair.
Went to the fair. Got to the fair. It was a beautiful day.
Did you have the bottomless cup of milk?
Yeah, I didn't go there actually. Didn't do the bottomless cup of milk, but we definitely, you know, one of the things that are our favorite there is they've got a turkey to go, which is like shredded turkey sandwiches. Delicious. Turkey to go.
Right. Where do you go with the turkey?
It's a sandwich. Like a you get it, like a little thing. There's a sandwich. Well, put some barbecue sauce
turkey
on
turkey sandwiches. Like, it's like, it's not a fine turkey establishment. Like, no. This is turkey to go. Like,
yeah, I'm not.
If you want cloth napkins, you have to go to Chez Turquet.
This isn't McGovern's pub and like in downtown St. Paul where they'll like have like basically Thanksgiving dinner. Like I order the turkey there. You know, it's like mashed potatoes and cranberry sauce. You know, so no, this is just a nice tasty shredded turkey sandwich, or I could get a turkey drumstick.
Is this the most unique thing you got at this state fair?
Got cheese curds, fried cheese curds.
Got
to do right, the fried cheese curds. You know, those are good.
Yeah. Those are tasty. We get a little more regional. Okay.
There you go. All right. Didn't do a Pronto Pub. I mean, which that might be heresy around here, but I mean, because people are like, oh, you go get a Pronto Pub at the fair, but you know.
I think you told me about the Pronto Pub. It's a hot dog wrapped in
pancake batter.
Pancake batter. That's right.
Deep fried in pancake batter instead of cornmeal.
I can't believe after a turkey to go sandwich, you didn't want a Pronto Pup.
And we did, you know, and the chocolate chip cookies. There was a huge crowd outside the chocolate chip cookie place. So we were just like, you know, there was 500,000 people there the day we were there.
Wow, I love chocolate chip cookies, but I don't wait in lines. I can't imagine a cookie being good enough to wait in a really long line for.
We baked some chocolate chip cookies at home a few days later. I mean, that was...
Yeah, it's still at the end of the day, it's a cookie. Like, get over yourself, cookie.
I mean, it's a nice thing. If the line was shorter, great. You could leave with a nice bucket of chocolate chip cookies, but, you know,
I don't wait in lines.
Kids had a blast. It's always a good...
That's all that matters, as long as the tiny new markers had a good time.
They got to see some livestock. That's always fun, you know, always fun for kids. You know, there's the pig barn, there's the goats.
go on. Tell me more. Go through every type of livestock you encountered. No, yeah. Well, that's great. I'm glad you had a great time at the fair. And yes, it's fun memories with the little
We had trouble finding Minnesota's largest boar, which I mean, I usually like seeing that because I mean, at least that means
not that big, is it?
At least it means I'm not Minnesota's largest boar if I see Minnesota's largest boar.
No, it depends. If it's measured versus through audio reach, you may be, but actual. So if you could not find the largest boar, how big could it actually be?
Like,
it's not that big.
It's just not.
It's not that big a boar.
Come on.
It's just a regular boar.
Yeah, it's just a regular boar. You just put a regular boar out there and said, look how big it is. It's like, well, you know. It's a dude.
You're
gonna
get some letters.
Yeah,
you're gonna get letters from the boar lobby.
Like, the Minnesota Pork Council.
All right.
Our barn, the pig barn at the fair, is the best.
Chris will be. They'll challenge Chris to a wrestling match with the state.
Come on, get in here. That accent I just used, that sounded more like the Texas state beer. Get over that boar. Oh gosh. All right. People are just already clicking out of this. Let's get in here, man. Let's
New markers, newsmakers. That's what we're here for. You got a great list, a lot of big names. Let us hit number 5 on the new markers, newsmakers.
Okay, number 5 on the list, we've got Medtronic unveiling new research around their next big thing with neurostimulation to treat Parkinson's and other neuro disorders. They're working on adaptive deep brain stimulation using their Percept PC neurostimulators. So they're gathering some positive data around. They say they filed for FDA approval for it.
So that's great. So, and this was a story that Jim Hammerin at Medical Design and Outsourcing has been following. He wrote something about it in August. Folks can check that out as well. Tell us a bit about the adaptive technology. What's its function?
Yeah, I mean, you can get the latest news on Mass Device, but Jim over at Medical Design Outsourcing has a great story. Expect another big deep brain stimulation tech advance from Medtronic soon. He's explaining in there how, adaptive DBS, it allows the system it automatically adjusts neurostimulation levels up or down according to the brain signals. Because
that's amazing.
Yeah. And, something else they have with their technology is their SenSight leads that not only like deliver the therapy, but, the other way they can, sense signals in the brain. So this then allows the adaptive DBS system then to like get the signals, automatically adjust. The goal is to provide even better therapy.
Well, hear that, New York Times. Like, write a story about this.
Yeah.
This is cool stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Come on.
This is really cool stuff. And I mean, just amazing that something that, in the past, like sometimes kind of felt, untreatable, now, we're just seeing these advances and there's just, so much more, hope for people with Parkinson's.
Fantastic. That's Sean Hooley wrote that article.
Sean got us the article on Mass Device. And
All right, Chris Newmarker, what is number 4 on the list?
Number 4 on the list, we've got Boston Scientific got the Silk Road Medical acquisition closed, $1.18 billion. And, there'd been some FTC scrutiny of the deal. It seems that, the FTC under the Biden administration has definitely upped antitrust regulatory enforcement. But, it looks like they made it through. Deal's done. Another good acquisition for Boston Scientific.
That's great. And I saw this isn't on the list, but related to Boston Scientific, Exonix prevailed in its legal battle with Medtronic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, there's still other stuff going on and around there, but definitely like a really big legal win for Exonix. And Medtronic's saying they're going to fight on in that IP fight. But
we'll see where that ends up. Cool. Let's turn to number 3. Another cool tech story that the New York Times should be writing about.
Well, number 3 on the list, we've got Synchron. Synchron announced the first use of its brain computer interface with an Amazon Alexa.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is
what does that allow people with the BCI to do.
And they said like they've got Mark, who's a 64-year-old man who has ALS, and they said that through his thoughts, he was able to use the Tap to Alexa feature on his Amazon Fire tablet, and this allowed him to to select these tiles for preset Alexa action. So he was able to like turn lights on and off in his house, using his thoughts. He could make video calls. He can play music and shows using his thoughts. He could even like pull up, Kindle books to read, or purchase items on Amazon just without using his hands or his voice. He's just using his thoughts to do that.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And what a life giver, a life restorer that would be for someone just to regain that level of independence.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So yeah, that's really good news. And they've also we're just a few months ago, we're saying they linked their BCI with the Apple Vision Pro. So they're showing how they can like link it up to all these types of different devices that we can we could have. I don't have an Apple Vision Pro sitting around, but I definitely am asking Alexa for things around the house a lot. This is just giving people like Mark like a lot of new options.
But speaking of Synchron, if folks want to learn more about Synchron, of course we've had them at Device Talks West, and the aforementioned Jim Hammerin, the managing editor of Medical Design and Outsourcing, will be hosting a conversation with Darragh McDermott, who's the Director of Neural Interfaces and Mechanical Systems, on next week's Minvasive series.
I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, Jim did a great job.
So excited about that series.
So this is like our Device Talks Tuesdays series, multi-day, on day one, which is Wednesday. It's over 2 days. Day one on Wednesday, there are two sessions. Abbott's chief engineer, Matthew Fischler, who we had recently on an Abbott Talks, we'll talk about the work with their dual chamber leadless pacemaker. Then at 2 o'clock, Darragh McDermott from Synchron will present. And then on Thursday at noon, Jim will be talking with Joshua Rodriguez from DePuy Synthes, J&J MedTech, about spine implants. And then Tori Smith, who will be a keynote at Device Talks West and has been a favorite subject of Jim's for a long time, the CEO of Endiatics. And the PillBot they'll be talking at 2 p.m. on Thursday. So this is all free. You just register for one or all the conversations. You can watch it live. If you want your questions answered, watch it live. If you just want to check out the show, you can watch it on demand at your convenience. But it's a great series, and it's got many, many sponsors, including Nordson Medical, Maxon, Aragon Medical Devices, New England Wire Technologies, Unifar Logistics, VitalPath, Kolmorgan, and Infus. So
yeah, Jim has like, as you would say, Tom, Jim has a murderer's row lineup.
He does. He absolutely does.
It's a really, really well put together live virtual medtech event. And as he said, with all those sponsors, it's free. So
register at devicetalks.com. Should be a great series. I'm looking forward to having some a turkey on the go sandwich or a pronto dog and sitting back and letting someone else lead these conversations. So
it's a pronto pup, Tom.
Pronto pup, sorry.
Pronto pup. We'll get you there. You there, Tom.
Pronto pup. Yes. All right.
All right.
Number two on the new market. Pronto
dog.
Pronto dog. Excuse me.
I'm going to walk into a pub next time and I'm in Boston and say it's great to be in Beantown. Don't do that.
All right. Number two on the new Marcus Newsmakers.
All right. Number two, we've got J&J's Shockwave, adding an enhanced catheter to their U.S. IVL portfolio. It's their next-gen E8 peripheral IVL catheter. Just for a reminder, J&J acquired Shockwave like for $13.1 billion in May, so they're a Johnson & Johnson business now. The medical experts in their news release were saying this next gen system has significant improvements. Helping physicians better refine the treatment algorithms, you know, and, you know, supporting, you know, kind of like more challenging cases, you know, when you're talking about having, like heavily, you know, calcified disease or, you know, below the knee peripheral artery disease. So just very cool.
And we'll be talking with Nick West, their chief medical officer at Device Talks West. I think I'll probably be sitting down with him on day two to talk about, he had previously been at Abbott, right? Yes, Abbott.
Yeah, he was at Abbott, yeah.
When he was
moved to Shockwave, and now he's inside J&J at Shockwave.
So Nick's great. He's great to talk to, and great insights on the tech and the condition that they're treating. So folks should make sure they join us at Device Talks West, which is happening October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center.
Yep.
All right.
Gotta be there.
Gotta
All right.
be there. Number one, this is late breaking, right?
Late breaking.
Sean Hooley wrote the Shockwave story. And
yes.
Sean Hooley wrote the Synchron story.
Yeah, Sean's cranking out the stories for us here on Mass Device.
Sean Hooley wrote the Boston Scientific story. Okay, maybe I should just have Sean up.
Hey, I'm writing things. Come on.
The Hooley's
I didn't luck out this week. Yeah, the Hooley makers.
We'll have to do something
great.
With Sean.
Yeah, let me hit the Hooley. Poolies. No, I just can't even go there. It's like, you know,
number one on the Newmarket's Newsmakers, written by Jim Hammerand of Metal Design.
Written by Jim Hammerand. I did have a story out yesterday pointing out that there was a major shareholder vote going on at Massimo.
Yes,
but,
yes.
You know, Jim, who's on the West Coast, caught our late breaking news that Peloton Capital Management is claiming they're saying that they won the Massimo board battle, that they've, you know, taken away the board seat from founder and CEO Joe Chiani at Massimo. So we'll be following this news through the day to see, you know, we haven't, you know, heard yet from Massimo on you know what the next steps are, but you know, if this pans out to be true. You know, like Mike Peloton saying that they're saying they've got a preliminary analysis by their proxy solicitor. You know, this will mean that, you know, that, Peloton will, be, gaining, they've won both of the seats they were, you know, seeking on Massimo's board. You know, on top of the two seats they, won, last year. So we will, you know, we'll see what happens next.
It looks like
so far the market's taking this this okay so far, and I also saw an analyst report already out saying that, you know, if Peloton's won, you know, that they're sticking with their buy rating for the company.
Okay, so Peloton. It looks like it's led by the managing partner and chief investment officer, Quentin Coffey, but the other board seats would go to Bill Jellison, who is former Stryker CFO, mm-hmm. and former Agilent Technologies senior vice president and chief technology officer, Darlene Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
And they joined former Johnson & Johnson MedTech executive, Michelle Brennan, on the six-person board. So there's a lot of MedTech there.
I mean, there's a lot of MedTech that they brought in.
Yeah.
Chiani said he was going to leave if he lost this, and you know, as well as you know, a lot of managers in the company and engineers. So we'll see how this we'll watch and see what the next things are with this story.
It'll be interesting to continue to follow the story. I remember because you had written, but Jim Rudd includes in the article here about the acquisition of Sound United, which I remember you and I talking about on the podcast early on. We were quite trying to figure out how speakers fit into a consumer healthcare business. So there's definitely been some moves that the reasons for which they were done weren't quite clear at the time to at least you and me. And that's not a big deal because you and I are just idiots. But
obviously the activist investors at Peloton, you know, thought the same thing. So here we go. Chiani and the management had been like looking at different options to spin off that consumer business, but a lot of problems with Paul Tone over at a lot. Very acrimonious proxy fight. I mean, they're usually never good, but this one especially, it seemed like almost every day, new accusations were flying back and forth, over this, and even landed in federal court, with Massimo, claiming improper communications, and the judge eventually said no, the vote could, which had been delayed here until September, could continue. But if this pans out the way Politan is saying, quite an end of this to this proxy fight, or maybe not. Who knows? Maybe there's still be some more going with this. So
we'll see. Interesting though that you're right. The analysts kind of are moving on already, as if it's moving on and remaining somewhat positive about the future. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, we'll see
all
how
right,
it plays
Kristen
out.
Marker. Well, good luck looking for that boar. I hope it pops up.
I think I'll skip. We'll just find it next year. I'm sure we'll...
Might not be the largest boar next year. There might be a new champion.
New champion. Who knows?
Yeah, it's exciting. We gotta get a booth at the Minnesota State Fair and broadcast live. I think that would
there
be
you
great.
Go. And we will not be the largest boar if we have our booth at the State
Second
Fair.
Second and third, for sure. Yeah.
We'll definitely hopefully entertain the people walking by us at the fair. I mean, what are we going to give out? You got to give out something at your booth.
We got to work in the merch. I'll get in touch with the merch department.
Got to get some good merch.
Yeah.
Do you want a food item? Do you want a
Device Talks dog? Let's go with that. What do you think?
The Device Talks dog. Yeah, I like it. You know, which was actually just like those packages of Costco hot
It'll
dogs
be a,
that
a
we
hot dog,
brought in on the coolers.
A hot dog wrapped in another hot dog. How's that?
Hot dog. I don't know. That's just a larger hot dog.
Too much sodium.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Come on, we're like a medical device
company.
Right,
we'll wrap it in bacon. No, everyone loves bacon.
Or we could do something healthy, right? And I'd do like
we want people to come to the booth, Chris. You're just talking about people in line for chocolate chip cookies, and you want to give out an apple? Like, you think anyone's gonna be checking us out? No.
No. Yeah. Right. Apple donuts.
Yeah.
There you go.
Or just
that good, but that's
Just spiked coffee for the parents who are lugging their kids around. A state,
there you go. That's always
state fair with 500,000 other people.
There you go. That could always be helpful as well.
All right, man. Thanks for everything.
All right. Well, good as always, Tom. Take care, man.
Take care.
Hello, Device Talkers. It's Kayleen Brown, managing editor of Device Talks. We are so thrilled to bring you our Women in MedTech Luncheon happening at Device Talks West, October 17th. So from 12:15 to 1:15 p.m., we are bringing together women in the medical device industry and our allies for a one-hour networking session. I also have the greatest opportunity to sit down with Cecilia Soriano, the President of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter International. Cecilia and I will be talking about how the industry can come together to better support women in medtech in more senior medtech roles, how our allies can support us, how more tenured women in medtech can support those who are newer to the industry, and how the more tenured of us can learn from those just entering the industry. So please, please, please join us on October 17th at Device Talks West for the Women in MedTech Luncheon. And a huge thank you to our generous, generous sponsors, Aptix, Capstan Medical, GlobalLogic, Integer Holdings, and Westfall Technic. We couldn't host our networking session if it weren't for your huge support. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you for supporting female leadership in the medical device industry. For more information, and of course to register, please go to west.devicetalks.com. I'll see you October 17th.
Well, Tori Smith, welcome to the podcast.
Tom, thank you so much for having me.
Excited to have you at Device Talks West. You're going to be our joint keynote at the end of my event, Device Talks West, and our Robo Business event. So you'll be appearing in front of both the Device Talks and the Robo Business crowd, which is apt because you do sit right at that intersection of robotics and medical devices. So we can talk a bit about what will be going on stage, but people who want to see that should come to the event and see that. I want this to be sort of an informational podcast that brings the story up to date so people at the conference knows what they're seeing and they know the importance of the story behind it. So Before we get into the Endiatic story, though, Tori, how did you find your way into doing what you do? You're an engineer, I know, but did you start off in biomed, or did you start off in another industry? What's your career path look like?
Well, Tom, my background is aerospace engineering out of Cal Poly SLO.
Okay.
Great school, right? Learn by doing. I think I took all of the IME manufacturing courses. Probably could have gotten some kind of like double major, but I just wanted to know how to make stuff. And Cal Poly had this really intense hands-on approach to engineering. That really phased well into med device startups. So I had, unfortunately, a member of my family, my Aunt Katie, pass away with a glioblastoma brain tumor right around the time I was ending college. And so I decided to sort of steer away from experimental aviation, which is obviously a really cool, fun thing for a young person to be involved in, towards health tech, because I felt like maybe I could have an impact. And something I'm really excited about with the upcoming show is that it was the 2006-07 timeframe when I first went to the Santa Clara Convention Center for a medical devices conference. And
no kidding.
To be getting hosted here and being able to demonstrate PillBot Live in that same building.
That's very cool.
The last thing I'll just say is med device is great. Aerospace engineering is great. But somewhere along the line, I took this crazy diversion out to Burning Man, where I started building crazy stuff with my friends. And I got to tell you, Tom, I'm scared right now because yesterday, 3,000 pounds of steel from our old tower showed up on this semi truck, and we had to unload, reload into a U-Haul. Now I have to get it to this warehouse just because I'm thinking eventually I want my kid to be able to climb on this structure, like on a ranch, say, and I don't want it to end up on, you know, in a dumpster somewhere.
What's the role of the tower? I've never been to Burning Man. Is this part of that?
Well, I founded a theme camp called Sextant after that, the navigational instrument. And we just brought really large scale science and engineering interactive works that you could play with, like 30-foot Tesla coils, big zip line tower, stuff like that. So love to make cool stuff, but we're back here in Silicon Valley because, you know, Burning Man is fun once a year, but we haven't done that for a number of years now. Now we're hell-bent on making these little tiny robots work.
That's amazing. And it's going back to your story. This is the second interview I've done today, It's a common, I mentioned it during that interview, and it's a common thing that we hear of someone in medtech having a personal experience that really either inspired them to begin a career or diverted a career into medical devices. So I'm sorry it took that to get here, but we're happy to have you, obviously, as part of the industry. So you were at Cordis, you were at Ensure Medical, you were at Athromed, so these are all medtech companies. You were elbow deep in medical technology. What is it that you enjoy about the medtech industry?
Traditionally, you know, my role would be starting with a napkin sketch idea of some kind of a device, probably some kind of a mechanical device that would go into the human body and help someone in some way. And a lot of my tenure was cutting plaque out of arteries or doing endometrial ablation or vascular closure. Those all were, you know, successfully exited companies. I feel like health tech has way more opportunities than we're necessarily chasing right now. So I feel like there's a bit of a renaissance taking place right now, not just with endiotics, but with companies across the health tech community, almost like a parallel to what we see happening over with SpaceX and Rocket Lab and Stoke Space. You know, we have this new space community that is changing the narrative on what we're going to do in space and how we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of companies that are now looking at health technology and saying, what if we just kind of start with a clean sheet? You know, how would we do health technology? I think it's just really exciting to be a part of that community. Now, I apologize for not completely answering the question. Please feel free to re-prompt me.
No, that's fine. I think it's good to point that out, and anyone who's a regular listener to the podcast will know my son is looking into, he's at Purdue studying engineering. He wants to get into aerospace. So you're right, there are definitely parallels between what's happened there, especially with SpaceX, of course. And I mean, you could see that, I'm not putting pressure on you, but Indy Attic someday could be sort of that similar, hey, let's just start from scratch, and let's, there's this large industry with all this built-in infrastructure and cost. How do we work around that? How do we compete with the Boeings? How do we compete with the others and create better ways of doing something?
You know, the neat thing here is we are absolutely going for the big win, right? I mean, we're swinging for the fences unabashedly. There's no question about that. But we don't necessarily see the technology that we're creating a bunch of losers. I mean, I think of PillBot as kind of like the little scout plane that would be hanging off of a crane on the back of a battleship many, many decades ago. PillBot's like a little scout that can go deeper into the community and find problems, bring those problems back into the traditional healthcare ecosystem. Hopefully more efficiently, more quickly. But we need all of the infrastructure that we built. We desperately need that infrastructure. We might just not need that infrastructure to do basic screenings. And that might be part of a conversation that opens up accessibility and lowers costs to many of the people who are experiencing healthcare at the sort of front door of healthcare, when you're feeling symptoms and you don't know what to do. That's where we want a wave of new technology to come in and help people and kind of ease their journey at that stage. If you truly are sick, I mean, let's identify that, get you to a hospital right away.
Absolutely. Well, let's take us to March 2019, when Indiatics was founded. What was the story behind that? What napkin was drawn on? Who was sitting around the ping pong table, the bar, wherever you were, where you sort of conceived of the company?
So March 2019, we incorporate, and we incorporated at Perkins Coie. Our corporate lawyer there, Jim Brenner, had us in physically to sign the paperwork, along with our IP attorney, Jordan Becker, two amazing people who have actually become angel investors in our company around that time frame. And so we were incorporated as part of one of my pass-fail assignments at the Founder Institute, because although I had a ton of startup experience, my earliest employee count was employee number 7. Okay. I had been employee number 11, number 7, probably like 15, right? To the point where I could work on the napkin sketch, I was often brought in as like the crazy mechanical designer who could, you know, build a functional prototype, build it into something elegant, then interface with manufacturing, get it to clinical, train doctors how to use it, right? That's a valuable set of skills. And I worked really hard to not get promoted during that time, because I would build custom SolidWorks workstations. Like I stopped counting my SolidWorks hours at 20,000 hours. It's insane. But I desperately wanted to be able to say I was the person that designed a thing. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, that's different, because we're working on products that are so much more complicated. Even though they're physically smaller, the scope of engineering involved with a tiny robot pill, the scope of the software, the electrical engineering, the code, is so far beyond what any one person can effectively say they do themselves. It's all about cross-functional collaboration now. So anyways, I was really grateful to the Founder Institute for basically putting a targeted Facebook ad out that said, come practice pitch your idea for free at the Founder Institute. Because as a startup engineer, I had spent years really excited about what we could do with robot pills. I had seen a $1 billion acquisition of the PillCam product through Given Image to Covidian. Medtronic obviously snapped them up. That was 14-15 timeframe. And I thought, my goodness, if a camera pill is worth $1 billion, what would a robot the same size be worth? You know, and how many people could it treat? And when we started to research that these camera pills were only being used about 1% of the time, we thought, holy cow. I mean, if we can make a device that does more than that, that you use every day on maybe every other patient, this could be a big deal. And so the only thing that was missing is I had no idea how to actually start a company. Like I'd worked at startups, I'd helped to write patents, but I'd never just gone and filed a patent myself. I'd been named number one inventor on patents. I was really proud of that. I would call my mother and tell her about that. But I needed help. And so founders can go to incubators and get that help. So March 2019, I had this homework assignment: incorporate your company as a Delaware C by the end of the week or you fail out of the program. One of the other homework assignments I got from Founder Institute was, this week, you will quit your job or you fail the program.
Wow.
Quit your job and go full time or you fail. One of the other homework assignments I got from Founder Institute was raise $100,000 by the end of the week or you fail. I mean, hardcore. And what I noticed is if you were willing to just rip the Band-Aid off, ask for help where you need it, and go 100% commit, then you could bring the Venn diagram of what's possible and what you actually want out of your life into a tiny state of overlap and then aim for that, right?
That's amazing.
So March 2019.
Focusing on that second assignment, though, the quitting of the job. I love talking about these moments. I often wonder, I think everyone has these romantic notions like, oh, someday maybe I'll. And I think they wait for like, the someday maybe I'll to sort of overtake them and just kind of guide them forward and say, I absolutely have to do this right now.
You want to wait until you feel safe to do this.
Yeah, but did you feel like did you reach a moment where it was a no brainer, like, oh, of course I'm gonna quit my job, or was it terrifying to write that letter, submit that email, whatever you did to cut those ties? Were you just as scared as you would have been a year or two before?
The fear that any founder is gonna deal with is gonna be existential. I dreamed about tiny robots in the body ever since I was a kid, watching movies like Fantastic Voyage or Inner Space, right?
Yep.
Then as a med device guy, I was really thinking like, could you drive a robot around in a person? Even before the Covidian acquisition of Given Imaging, before that $1 billion sale, I had been trying to do robots. I had been buying Arduino hardware and trying to do it all myself. I spent 10 years from 2008 to 2018, telling my friends that someday I was going to start a company building robot pills. 10 years.
Wow.
Sketching the logos, you know, getting told it was impossible, getting mainly told, get back to work. Right. And finally, you know, 10 years in, I finally had the courage and the prompt from that ad, practice pitcher idea for free, to do it. And I have to credit the artistic community over at Burning Man a little bit with, maybe a lot, with helping me to slowly build up a sense of self-worth and ambition. Because in the sandbox that was Black Rock City, you were encouraged to build cool things. And then you had 80,000 screaming fans loving what you did. That rubs off on a person. It's a huge empty canvas. And so after a few years of building giant Tesla coils and zipline towers and having people come from all over the world to help us build it, many of them are venture capitalists, they're all telling us, you guys need to start a company. Eventually, you know, we said, okay, let's do it. So it took a lot of encouragement. So I would simply say to anyone with an idea, never, ever wait until you feel you're ready or the time is right.
Mm-hmm.
Instant you have an idea that you just can't get out of your head, where you think people are crazy for not doing this, that's when you need to act, and you're probably going to have to ask for help. Like I finally learned I could do. Like I used to think that I couldn't found a company if I couldn't write all the code, do the electrical engineering, also do the mechanical engineering, write the patents. I get to be involved in some of those things now, but I finally learned how to ask for help and build teams.
That's fascinating. No, and you're right. I think when people have their romantic notion of starting something, they're always just thinking about how they're going to do it on their own, not taking into account that there are people out there, there are networks out there, there are resources out there for you to lean on and that have done this before and can give some insights.
And it will be frustrating and scary, and there will be politics involved, and there will be founder drama, and there will be every kind of of stress you can imagine.
It's not all ice creams and unicorns, you're saying?
No. It's really, really hard. I mean, Jensen over at NVIDIA recently said if he could do it all over again, what would he change? And he said, I wouldn't do it.
I heard that, yeah.
This is gnarly, right? I'm not in that camp just yet. I'm extremely proud to be here. It's been a life-changing experience to step up to this plate and take a swing. I would absolutely encourage people who are really passionate about their crazy cool idea to go for it. But just understand, I don't think it's going to be – you're not going to find a moment in your life where it's a lower level of stress or fear or imposter syndrome or existential crisis.
Right.
You will simply have gotten a lot better at chewing on those things.
Interesting. That's really fascinating.
I spend most of every day, you know, feeling humiliated, feeling like a failure, feeling like I'm not good enough, smart enough, ambitious enough, motivated enough, skilled in business enough, right? Like my head is constantly full of these fears and emotions for very real reasons, right? It's just, I won't quit. I just won't do it. And not quitting, I think, is probably one of the most important components.
That's such a great story. Let's talk a bit about Endiatics, the company, and PillBot, your first product. So Endiatics set out with the explicit mission of creating PillBot. That was your primary focus, or is PillBot the first iteration of your mission, which is broader?
It's the first iteration. So yeah. Endiatics is endoscopy going within the human body, endo. Mm-hmm. Via diagnostics, understand what the heck is wrong. TX is what a doctor writes down for treatment. Mm-hmm. And so endoscopy, diagnostics, treatment, we want to go inside the human body with tiny robots, and we want to do things. We want to look around, we want to find problems, and then we want to fix those problems. We think if you drink water and your stomach is a place where a little drone can swim around, that's probably a good place to start, right? So mm-hmm. I can take a really huge horse pill and that can do medicine in my stomach. And then it paves the way for a slightly smaller version that might be more elegant or might go beyond just the stomach. But we are not going to run out of steam intellectually, spiritually, until well past doing rice grain sized nuclear powered brain surgeon robots. I mean, mm-hmm. we're here to really lock this in. We're here to show the world that technology is amazing. Decades ago, we've had access to tools that could change the face of healthcare. We're here to apply those tools and, you know, probably create a few of the new ones ourselves, but let's share, let's collaborate.
And we're going to have a panel of some of your engineers there speaking before you do, sort of getting into the technical successes that you've had. So we're excited
I'm incredibly proud of this panel because we were trying to figure out, like, what do you call a panel like this? What do you call biomedical engineering, right? You can go to school and study biomedical engineering. And is that mechanical engineering and biology? Like, what exactly is that? Biomedical engineering to us just is the extremes of all of the engineering disciplines put into the human body, right? Mm-hmm. So hardcore electrical engineering, computer engineering, bottom of the stack, like programming FPGAs, designing ASICs, writing Verilog, VHDL. I mean, really sticky, gnarly, bottom of the stack electrical and computer engineering and software engineering, plus some crazy mechanical involving really weird fluids, right? So it's mechanical, but you could also say aerospace engineers would have something to say about that. Biomedical is interesting because we recently were able to have our first actual biomedical engineer work with us over the summer. This amazing young lady named Zoe Danilchek, she's in the Midwest. We're really hoping to have her back because her insights from the biomedical engineering program were actually extremely, extremely well received, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you need people guiding all of these passionate, crazy engineers. But when it was all said and done, we decided to try to call this engineering panel biomedical engineering at the extreme limits because mm-hmm. the things we've had to do to get a robot to move under its own power in your body, transmitting live video, responding to commands, giving you three-dimensional navigable ability. Not easy. not impossible, but certainly not easy.
This is Tom Salami of Device Talks. We're excited to bring you another great program for Device Talks West here at the Santa Clara Convention Center, talking new business models, new missions, and new intentions. I can't wait until we fill this auditorium with MedTech's best engineers, entrepreneurs, and executives. This is Device Talks West.
The foundation of connected care is the who we are that drives what we do. We shape our environment, and then our environment shapes us.
Thoughtful discussions of how it impacts not only markets, but society and the workforce.
What is it doing for the patient? And that's what our technology needs to be.
I look at what the standard of care is today. Are there areas where we can improve upon the standard of care, or are there areas where there are significant gaps? And that's what drives me.
What am I trying to accomplish? You know, getting back to that core, what problem am I trying to solve? Am I going to do something new and really move the needle for patient outcomes? So there's a ton of work to be done, and that's what keeps me excited.
Why did you choose MedTech? Find out at Device Talks West on October 16th and 17th. Register at west.devicetalks.com.
The folks that are saving lives, they're all here.
So do you, I mean, you've got a medical device background, you're an engineer, as we talked about, several startups, all of which went on to be acquired, by the way. So there's a good success there. Do you, describing Endiatics to someone at a barbecue, are you a medical device company or a robotics company, or does it matter, really?
Yes, I want to talk about the company. I want to talk about myself for a bit, just because, like, I'm in such an existential crisis constantly. Like, I am constantly surrounded by people in really shiny, fancy suits telling me that I'm not good enough, just blazing at me that I am just not the right person for this. And you'll look at their pedigree and it's like, okay, you've done a lot of weird software stuff. Most of the ventures you were involved with failed. And you're going to tell me, you're to my face, that I'm not good enough and that I'm not the person to, like, have the vision that carry the torch for this company. It's unnerving, right? We had three successes in a row right here in Silicon Valley centered on the 2008 financial crisis. And it's like we get no respect for those medical device successes. And I think the reason is that medical device doesn't get enough respect in the world of tech. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, heck yeah, Endiatics is a medical device company, but we're here to basically puff out our chest to the tech world and say, we are here to bring the brightest people, the most ambitious engineers, the most ambitious venture capitalists, right? People who really want to swing for the fences. Finally, I want you to feel attracted to medical device, because this isn't just your dad's plastic staple gun, right? This is something more along the lines of new space. And so we're desperately trying to get Endiatics to be seen as a tech company, a medical device company, a medical robotics company, a robotics company, somewhere in there. Really, the adventure is micro robotics in the human body. And that's where I feel like there is a bit of a torch that we're carrying. And it's really interesting, because we're very much having, like, your Apple, Steve Jobs, like, Coke, you know, CEO question right now, which is like, if we bring in someone who completely understands medical device right now, like, does that mean you understand PillBot? Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what it's going to take to do a nuclear powered rice grain size brain surgery? I don't think anyone on planet Earth is qualified for that, right? We are trying as fast as we can to learn how to grow with this role. And we are absolutely bringing in amazing people as leaders to help guide us. But I think it would be extremely short-sighted for founders out there to just go for the earliest exit that comes your way step aside the instant there's a good multiple on the original investment and just sell it and retire. Like, that almost seems like the model within most startups is just build one thing, get exitable, exit and move on and sell another thing. But there is a problem with that mentality, which is that if we look at our predecessors with camera pills, Given Imaging comes out of Israel in 1997, October of 1997, I think it is, a human being swallows a camera pill, right? 2001, it becomes FDA approved. And we hoped it would disrupt colonoscopy, upper endoscopy. Didn't quite do that. It became a useful tool, mostly used in the small intestine, where it's really not fun to get a scope. But nonetheless, camera pills become a real thing. All the original founders of Given Imaging wanted to make moving camera pills. They wanted to do moving robotics. Their passion was probably to use magnetic fields to do it. They were concerned they couldn't do it with self, you know, self-actuated robotics. So they were going to use magnetic fields. The reason that never went anywhere is that in 2014, they did sell the company. Mm. And when you sell a company, that is the end of your R&D capacity having teeth.
Interesting.
You can say you do R&D, but
yeah.
Now 2024 and Medtronic, who owns that product line, have finally rolled out a new lower profile wearable that receives the wireless data coming off of the pill camera. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. But it is more than 25 years after that thing was first swallowed.
As you were talking, I checked the dates because I'm like, that can't be right, 2001. But you're right. PillCam was initially cleared by the FDA 2001 to visualize the small bowel. And then in 2004, I think it was the esophageal.
And here's my problem. The reason why I won't step aside, the reason why we must carry this torch way, way past PillBot, through PillSurgeon, through MicroSurgeon, we have to sprint through the finish line because the finish line is just one milestone for this first product. The reason for this is that while all these people are doing early exits, accepting smaller market penetration because the robot or the platform maybe isn't giving a doctor what they really need to be able to use it every day, while we do this death by a thousand cuts and we take these smaller victories, something like every 39 seconds, someone is dying of stomach cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and like imagine like over a quarter century, how many people is that? And we the medical device industry can do something about that. And so I feel like there is a license to be bold on behalf of the people who are dying. And that's why I'm not ready to just go for a quick, easy exit on this one. We must establish this benchmark of tiny robots in the human body. Then we need to stand on it and we have to go way beyond it. We need to let people come into this ecosystem with molecular size motors, right?
Has anyone offered an exit to you yet? I have to imagine you're early on still, but you're saying looking forward.
So present day, we're in the GI tract. So you can imagine we go to the big GI show, which is Digestive Disease Week every year. And it's been virtual during COVID. It's been in San Diego. We were there as well. It's been in Chicago. It's been in Washington, D.C. We've been to all of those DDWs. At those conferences, we sit down with the top executives of all of the big OEMs, right? Every single one of them as potential exit scenarios, right? These are the people who had been part of those acquisitions that we spoke about. And basically, what we've heard from the medical device community at the top OEM level is, we will not help you develop this. We have corporate venture capital funds, but we will not invest in you because this is too wild ass risky. Right? People want to invest in digital health, right? People want to invest in a sure thing, a very simple device with a very simple target. They're not going to help invest in us. Maybe now that we're a Series A company, that's a conversation that's a very, very much present right now for us. We can become an investable target, but They're not going to help us design it, build it. They're not going to help us fund it. But once it's working, they will absolutely fight over it to acquire it. And not in a negative way. You know, we're not getting any people speaking down to us or being mean. They're just saying this is too risky for the thesis of our fund. But that speaks to the cancer in our industry, which is that we are not a very bold industry. Health tech investment is probably the least bold wing of venture capital of any other vertical, right? There's no one less bold than those who make investments in health tech. There are some, like the people that led our seed round, amazing venture capitalists out of Singapore and Hong Kong, the Verge Health Tech Fund. That would be Joseph McConnell and Scarlett Chen. But that was a personal intro from our incubator over at the Founder Institute, right? Where I'm going with this is someone needs to be bold on behalf mm-hmm. of the people who are dying, right? And I feel like Endiotics can help to carry that torch to a certain extent. More importantly, to bring other people in to collaborate with us. Some might call it competition, but when I look at the trillions of dollars that are spent on human healthcare, there's no way that one company like ours could ever even be creative enough to dream up and build products to address all of human health. We're going to have fun with robot pills in the stomach. We're going to build robot surgeons. We're going to go on to build microsurgeons. But even that could only ever be a tiny fraction mm-hmm. of people who actually need help. And so we're trying to do an open call for people to join us. And the thing is, we're not the first. We're not the only ones. Like, have to give credit to bold capital partners who funded Bionaut Labs. They're mm-hmm. doing microscopic helical swimmers that swim up your cerebrospinal fluid into your brain. Magnetically actuated, to be sure, right? So mm-hmm. it takes medical equipment. Amazing. Look at Roboté in Paris. You've got Bertrand Duplat, Joanna Cartocci over there. They're doing rice grain size brain surgeons today, right? And they have a really interesting platform. They're beginning to get really cool credit. The key is just collaborating with people that want to be bold in this space.
And I'm with you entirely with, and this is a bit off topic, but you're so right about how the medical device industry isn't able to capture the spirit of the imagination. It drives me crazy that the most famous medical device company is Theranos. And you mentioned Theranos yesterday in our prep call for the conference. And that's the go-to for everybody where...
That's why I hold these robot pills and I look at them as visionary as I can be, because that is exactly how I feel with PillBot. PillBot fills me with a sense of childlike wonder. And I'm not going to let a sad, unfortunate story stop me from carrying a bright torch, or stop me from broadcasting how excited and in love with this adventure I am. I want it to be safe for some other founder to do what we're doing.
It drives me equally crazy that, you know, you'll have people excited about a DoorDash or some other, or Uber, which is a wonderful service, but all these tech companies that are being credited for changing the world, and certainly they've reformed the economy, but look what you're talking about. I mean,
let's talk about DoorDash. Let's give a shout out to a really good friend. I super look up to this guy, Ilya Polyakov, brilliant, brilliant engineer. He's a battle boss champion from the 90s. He's a multiple time startup founder here in the Bay Area, deep tech guy. He's the head of hardware at DoorDash.
Okay. Right?
And he's doing some awesome stuff. He can't speak too much about it, but I have a feeling it involves some kind of fancy delivery scheme, right, for food, which is really cool. Like, I'm just brainstorming, like, okay, a drone brings me a burrito. Great. I love it. The thing that bugs me, though, is I've tried to get Ilya to join our company so many times at a really high level, but DoorDash is paying him really well, and he's an amazing guy, and he's a family man. He has real problems to take care of. But there is an insane brain drain from traditional tech companies that pulls talent away from health tech companies. Mm-hmm. And so I am hoping that with swallowing robots live on stage and putting on all these crazy theatrics. On the one hand, we can start to build trust with the community. We need to repair the trust. We need to make it safe to be bold and innovative and ambitious. For heaven's sake, I want it to be safe to be insanely ambitious in this space, right? Because we need to be able to draw the excitement of the population towards healing technology. And so we want to, in a friendly way, like Elon, not trying to start a war here, we need to be able to compete with the Teslas and the SpaceXs. When college grads or college kids or high school students or junior high school students are thinking, what do they want to do with their summer or their project, with their science fair, with their internship, with their full-time hire, right? We want to make sure people are being exposed to what we're doing with robot pills in the hopes that really weird, creative, brilliant people will be drawn to this because we need help. We need brains, right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. No, and as the dad of an engineering student who, you know, I've spent my life in med tech and he's enamored with space, which I get too, as am I, but I would love to pull him in here. So hopefully a story like this will help. So we've covered a lot of ground. You'll be giving the presentation on the afternoon of October 17th. You've got a new element to it. I don't know if you want to talk about it or we're going to talk about there, but.
Oh, it's man. Sort of- yeah. So you can see that my cup says, I feel the need for better image quality. So we took a Top Gun mug and my chairman gave me this gift. I have this awesome chairman. His name is Alex Lupke. He has a PhD in aerospace engineering from Stanford. He hails from Google X.
Wow.
He and I have this hilarious friendship and tension because 9 times out of 10, he's dead right and I'm dead wrong on day-to-day flow of this tech company functioning. 1 times out of 10, on my end, I'll come up with some really weird, crazy, brilliant idea that must make its way into the stack. And if you just have diligence, you can grind something out. And if you only have inspiration, you're going to be under a bridge playing with like chopsticks and cardboard and spray paint. This guy and I have been working for years to desperately try to make the PillBot technological ecosystem functional. And so image quality is a thing that we have been struggling with for years. And for the show coming up, we're really excited because we're not going to be competing with the best endoscope for the live video. You're going to notice like we're 480 pixels square, you know, maybe 7 to 10 frames per second. It's actually not terrible. Our optical quality itself is not perfect. We're starting to learn that there's a lot of meat on the bone, so to speak, with what we can do with the camera settings, the image sensor settings. But what we're going to be showing is the best video we've ever had, which we're proud of. We know it needs to be better, but we're proud of it. More importantly, we're going to show you 2 live views. So normally when you swallow a PillBot, well, you see a view from the front of a robot as it swims around in your stomach, which is theoretically very cool, especially if you're looking at the cavernous opening of your stomach, because I just drank a bunch of water. You can see the wrinkles and the folds. You can see stomach waves moving towards the pylorus. It's pretty cool, theoretically. But half the time, the robot's just like stuck against the front of the stomach wall, and it's just like pink and blurry. And then, you know, you'll back it off and you'll pan around, get a better view. To really show people what we're doing and get people excited, we realized, and frankly, to know what the hell is going on, we made another version of our robot that points straight up and it sinks to the bottom and it just looks with a nice wide angle lens and it acts like a passive cameraman. So that while the robot's going around, you can see the live video from the robot. You can see the robot itself, which if I'm sitting in the audience and I heard someone was going to swallow a robot, that's what I instinctively, emotionally want to see.
The robot, so yeah.
We're kind of excited to be, you know, debuting that at this show just because it's funny that tech companies often say they're going to make one product, then they make an internal tool to just help them be more effective. And then that internal tool ends up having insane, weird new value propositions. So we are not at all against learning that there's a whole portfolio of products that might come out of Endiotix. But in the meantime, I'm just excited to be able to show this audience the actual robot flying. Right. We just put a video out on my chief engineer's YouTube channel where I'm a big Star Trek fan. And one of my favorite scenes is Khan versus Kirk. Battle in the Mutara Nebula.
It's the best movie.
Right. And so I asked Quentin, who's going to be leading this panel, to mix the James Horner soundtrack from the Mutara Nebula battle to this synced live footage of those two robot views, because in my stomach, it's a little hazy. There's particulates floating around. You get these retrograde bursts of bile occasionally, which looks like very nebula-like. As it and it's so much fun to show this community that you can have fun in health tech,
yeah.
Right? You can play. When we play with PillBot, we actually learn things and PillBot gets stronger. When we get really stodgy and try to get super serious, usually we're missing something. Now, with that being said, we are standing up regulatory, clinical, quality departments here. We're building our QMS. Mm-hmm. We're about to rip all the carpet out of our conference room and build a clean room. We are rapidly approaching auditability. We're getting ready to file our IDE so that we can do our pivotal trial. I mean, we are absolutely growing and growing up as a company, but we must maintain that spark and keep that sense of childlike wonder, because that's why we're here. And this horse pill that I'm holding, this is not the end of our journey,
mm-hmm.
right? This is a beautiful beginning.
Fantastic. We can't go any further than that. I think we've excited people. I'm excited. I mean, I think every great company out there, from Apple to SpaceX to Tesla, at some point or the other has been doubted, and the founders have been told that it ain't going to work. So it's not a guarantee that it will work, but you're certainly in good company at this stage at Endiotix. And it's nice to my point. It drives me crazy that there's not, that MedTech isn't more, doesn't receive more notice for all the amazing work that's gone on in helping patients and developing great therapeutics, and people are focusing on technology that is nice but is not this.
We're not here to say there's a boogeyman in our healthcare system. I think we can all agree that the U.S. healthcare system has a lot of money flowing through it.
Yep.
And that perhaps it could deliver a lot more healthcare. But rather than getting in a fight right then and there, right? Who should have the money? Who should get the healthcare? Right? What a bitter and played out battle that is,
yep.
Right? That's a battle that has played out in our political system for decades. People across all strata of the United States community have different opinions on who should get what, who is winning, who is losing. If you zoom out, you simply see a huge healthcare system that has amazing technology, that has a lot of money transacting, but there's huge opportunity to be better, right? I think we all agree on that. And so we're hoping that PillBot is a little bit of a ray of light. So what we're going to say is, if you're a patient in GI distress, well, we can probably get you resolved 10 times quicker. Probably 10 times cheaper. Mm-hmm. Like if you're an insurance provider and you're paying for the 5 hospital trips that got one patient to an upper endoscopy, starting with an ER visit, that insurance provider might be really excited about working with hospitals and healthcare systems that have PillBot in their ecosystem, because that patient might come out of their active payments after just like one telemedicine visit. Mm-hmm. Right, so the insurance company gets to save money. The doctor, on the other hand, rather than doing a diagnostic upper endoscopy, which really doesn't pay well, you know, there's no real incentive to do it. So they're just struggling to figure out how it makes sense for them. Struggling to figure out how, you know, if you're going to jam this tube into someone's body, you probably want to try them on a diet first, an antacid. You know, you have to do all this appropriate gatekeeping to justify knocking someone out and jamming a tube in their body, right? We're going to let that same doctor skip to advanced medicine right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, your stomach hurts? Here, drink some water. Let's go look for what's troubling you, right? For really sick people, we're going to find that sickness earlier and get them to the hospital sooner so that endoscopes and gastroenterologists and hospitals, you know, real traditional healthcare, let's let them work on sick patients. Let's move the screening out into the population, right? We're not here to make anyone a loser. We actually anticipate that PillBot in the ecosystem is going to increase the number of normal endoscopies because we're going to be finding things that need to be treated. So we really haven't found a loser here in anywhere across the ecosystem. I think it's just similar to getting across the Atlantic Ocean. You know, if you want to take your family, you know, on a visit to New York and you live in London and it's 1505, that's a very interesting proposition, isn't it? And people did that, right? Like an aristocrat could spend 2 years taking their family on an insane, risky voyage across the world. It probably happened a few times. Nowadays, if you want, you can be in your pajamas and get on a 747 and cross the ocean for a couple $100. Mm-hmm. And that 747, that commercial airline travel, that completely new way to travel, that's kind of what we're trying to do with PillBot, is just a completely new paradigm for going into the human body and looking around and then perhaps even doing something about it.
Fantastic. Well, looking forward to the presentation at Device Talks West and RoboBusiness. And thanks for being part of it.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. And when the time comes, please cross your fingers, cross your toes. The audience might see me whipping my tummy around, trying to get PillBot out of some mucus at the top. But we're going to be speaking through the whole experience, and we're excited to put on a good show. So thank you so much.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Please do join us at Device Talks West on October 16th and 17th. Be great for you to be there. You can meet Tori Smith, can meet lots of great folks from Abbott and Boston Scientific and Stryker and Medtronic and J&J, Shockwave, Penumbra, and more and more and more. We're going to have the whole region covered at Device Talks West. So if you're in the area or not, make sure you make an effort to attend and use the code DTPOD25 to save 25%. Short term, join us on Tuesday for our Device Talks Tuesdays with Aptics. Again, it's gearing up. Benefits and design considerations for high performance plastic gears. Aptics always does a great job. Make sure you join us there. It's free. You can watch it live or on demand. Ask your questions either way, and they will get answered. Just do me a few favors regarding the podcast. If you're not a subscriber to the Device Talks Podcast Network, please do. That way you don't miss a future episode. And also, if you wouldn't mind sharing this episode on your social media channels. It'd be great to get the word out. Give us a ranking on your podcast player, by the way, that helps. But if you don't want to do any of those things, you know, okay, all right, that's fine. My feelings aren't hurt, but at least connect with me on LinkedIn, Tom Salemi, connect with Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, and of course, connect with Chris Newmarker, editor-in-chief at Mass Device. All right, thanks folks for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.